Welcome to Oh Shit, What Now? The only podcast with two entrepreneurial mom friends with nine sons between them. We're tackling topics from raising kids to running a business. Our guests include some of the most impressive, accomplished women out there who did it all while being a mom. We're making space for all of us to listen, learn, and lift each other up while doling out advice, inspiration, and more than a few laughs. Welcome back to another episode of Oh Shit, What Now? With Shannon Fletcher and Dorothy Cole. Today, we are welcoming Michal Levison of Seasoned Moments, among other things that she's doing with her life, which we'll get into, and to the podcast today. And we are excited to have her here. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you
so much for having me.
I loved looking up your company and the No More Vanilla Teams. I love that.
Yeah, coming up with some of that language, I just sat there like, how do I make it not cheesy, but also related to food? Because that is the impetus for my work.
Well,
why don't you let us know what Seasoned Moments is, since our listeners will not understand what vanilla and cheesy mean, possibly.
Okay, so I'm going to take you back just a little further from Seasoned Moments, just to give you a little bit behind the scenes of how I got there. I had my first baby, and within the first year, I just felt really alone because it felt like everyone had the very specific, like helicoptering and tiger parenting were really in vogue at the time, and I just felt like completely outside of that.
Thank goodness. That's us. You're amongst friends.
Yes, absolutely.
Like Lenore Skenazy was talking about free range kids and everyone was coming down on her and like they wanted to put her in prison. And I was like, my hero.
Yes. Free range.
I never know where my kids are. And it happened since they were five. So
I would venture, I guess, that I was even, you know, if I didn't live in a one bedroom apartment at the time, I probably wouldn't have known where my kid was. She just was there because there was not a lot of space. So I started a parenting blog and it was called Bump to Bean and it was supposed to be like a general parenting blog. And then all of a sudden I realized that the thing that interested me was feeding my kid and how I can build my family around food, because my husband and I are both complete foodies and all we talk about is food and we eat our way through every city that we visit. We decided that that was the important thing. And so quickly, the blog turned into a how to build your family through food
kind of thing.
And it became popular. And I had like 40,000 followers, like monthly followers, who all of a sudden turned to me for advice. So for 10 years, I worked with families, helping them build relationships and how to bond over getting food and cooking in the kitchen and a shared meal. And all that work really made sense to me. And then few years ago, probably like 5 years ago with COVID, like I'm not even sure about timing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, ripped it a year and a half or 2 years out of my life. And I'm like, was that last year?
Yeah.
Was that 4 years ago?
I know. It's true. It's true.
So I transitioned into the corporate sphere because I realized that what I was doing with families, I could really, you know, shift into teams at companies. So what I started advocating for was lunch and a shared meal as a way for people to take a break from their work, as a way to connect with their coworkers, and as a way to become more creative and productive. And so that is the synthesis of Seasoned Moments and what it is today. I still work with families. I still am very interested in how a shared meal and how cooking together can influence relationships on the multiple spheres. So I work with families. The bulk of the work now is corporations, but I've even started working with communities who want to bring people from disparate backgrounds, religious affiliations, political affiliations together. And I like to use food as that bridge. So that's where it all comes, because food is
universal.
Well, exactly. You have a quote also on your website that says, we don't always have everything in common, but we all have to eat. Exactly. And I was like, that's beautiful. It's so true. And so keep talking about that and what you're doing with bringing people together, because my God.
Yeah. So great. Food has always been central. Well, first of all, obviously we need it to survive, right?
Right.
We need nourishment. But in today's crazy day, you know, age of distraction and work, work, work. And, you know, it's almost like we feel like we don't pause for the lunch, right? We don't even pause for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I will give you the horrifying statistic that about 40% of all American meals are eaten in the car.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in the car.
Okay, I don't go that far. At my desk.
I thought that was like our one win in COVID was that we would sit down and eat dinner every night with the kids. And we, you know, it used to be we'd be eating at 9 or 10 o'clock because of sports and whatever. Then all of a sudden we have this like open day and mealtime was actually bonding, even though we're in the house all in different corners of it. It's
you
really
can see,
brought us back to that.
And it's such an important part of humanity, right? Since we were in our primal state where we literally needed community to gather and to eat because you couldn't do it all on your own and you were part of this kind of like hive, right? You went out, you foraged together and you had to collaborate to be able to eat and to survive. And I think that nowadays with technology, especially that seems to bring us all so much closer together, what it's really doing is separating us. And the shared meal is this really amazing opportunity to go back to our roots, to go back to like the very natural state of humanity, to connect over something that is literally essential and that nourishes our bodies, but it can also nourish our minds and our spirits when we connect with other people.
So are you helping people understand how to do that? Because if we take it right back to like, we've forgotten how to forage and how to gather and all of those things, you know, my team of foragers are my Instacart drivers that are bringing it to my front door right now. So are you helping people come back to learning how to do it?
Yes. Yes. I don't personally take people out on foraging tours.
Right.
There's probably companies you can get with that'll do that with you.
So I give a lot of talks and I give a lot of workshops. And I think people have forgotten, you know, that there are farmers markets and even in the grocery store, if you shop in a very certain way, which is shop the extremities.
Exactly.
Like stay away from the middle because the middle is where all the stuff that is meant to last for years sits on a shelf.
Right.
But the extremities, because they're close to where the truck's delivered, so they don't travel very far within the grocery store because it's fresh. It's the fresh stuff. And so it needs to be out as, you know, directly from the truck. If you can, you know, stay on the perimeter, you're so much better off.
Right. If your food's got a commercial, you probably should eat it, right?
Yeah. You know, if it comes in a box, if it comes in some sort of fancy packaging, you want to stay as close to nature as humanly possible.
Right.
But, you know, you don't have to plan your own vegetable garden. But my gosh, if you can, even if you grow some herbs in your windowsill in an apartment, you know, just the feel of reconnecting to some part of nature is so important for us as humans.
And there's so many ways that you can grow food in apartments now, going straight up. I've seen all of these like urban farming techniques.
They're amazing.
Yeah,
there's water-based systems. Yeah. There's soil-based systems. There's so much out there. I don't have one specific system that I say like, this is the one.
Right.
There's so many options. Everything from just a tiny little like self-watering pot all the way up to these amazing contraptions that you can literally, like you can have your own giant garden, but it's vertical. And so it fits in anywhere and you can literally feed yourself, which is so incredible. But I even give workshops on how to like repurpose and regrow from scraps. Did you know that when you get to the bottom inch and a half of the lettuce, if you just stick that in some water, within a few days, it'll start to root and you can stick that in soil and regrow a whole head of lettuce and it'll keep regrowing.
Oh my God.
I did not know that.
I throw that stuff out all the time.
I was just going to ask you where to start. I'm going to start with lettuce.
I'm going to start with lettuce.
Lettuce. It's so easy. And you'll see it'll start shooting from the middle.
Romaine lettuce, iceberg lettuce, any of them?
Any lettuce.
Oh man.
Any lettuce. Same with celery. You can do the same. Like, cut down like that at the root, like the last inch and a half to 2 inches.
Oh.
Stick it in water. It'll start to root and then you can stick and you'll see it'll start shooting up from the center. It's the coolest thing. You really feel like, oh my God, look at me.
Oh my God, I'm like a farmer. I'm like a straight farmer.
Now, if you could do that with a bottle of wine,
Do you do any pairings?
Always pairings for growing vegetables. Always. I recommend white wine with the celery. And a nice French burgundy.
Awesome.
I read an article one time that had like a 1970s diet on it. And I swear to you, white wine was lunch and dinner with some celery and like just ridiculous. It was in vogue.
Yeah. Oh my God. What you were talking about, bringing this into a business and a company, what does your workshop work around that, other than, you know, here's food, let's all, you know, have a meeting together? That's obviously not going to do a lot other than people are like, yay, free food.
There are different elements. I'll be very honest. There are different workshops that people, there can be one-off workshops, and then it's, you know, it can go all the way up to really analyzing a company's culture and helping shift it. So the issue that I've really come across is that HR is now in a 24/7 cycle. Millennials, Gen Z is coming up now too, but millennials in particular have a tendency to leave a job after 8 months.
Wow.
And the biggest reason is that they're not connected, right? They are not connected to their colleagues. They're not connected to the mission of the company. And so when a different opportunity, you know, comes along, they have no problem jumping ship. You know, they have a very different view of work life than, you know, our generation.
Right.
Where work really, like, you made friends at work. You connected to people. That was,
yeah,
because it's such a big chunk of your day. The fact that we don't connect at work is terrifying. And these millennials don't stop. They think that, like, okay, I'm going to be so super productive because I'm going to work 8 hours straight.
Right.
But the science shows us that our brains don't work that way. Our brains can only work for short spurts of time before, you know, the productivity drops off the cliff.
Yeah.
So really, at every hour, we should be taking a 5-minute break. And then in longer spans, we need to take longer breaks.
Right.
What's the perfect opportunity to take a slightly longer break? Lunch, right? This is your chance to step away from your desk, go sit at a table with another human being, talk about things that have nothing to do with, like, you don't have to talk about work. This is the opportunity for your brain to go into the default network. And when we relax, it's not that our brain turns off, but what our brain does, it actually has the time to process the experiences that we've had. It can process memories. It can process all of that stuff. So when you come back to the work, you've given yourself kind of a perspective shift, even if it's like a 1-degree perspective shift. All of a sudden are refreshed and renewed, and you can look at the work in a different light. And if you've been struggling for 3 hours of the problem, if you step away from it, talk about some nonsense, you've given your brain that time to percolate, and now you can look at the problem and probably tackle it in a much more effective way.
I have had that happen. I mean, I'm a CFO, right? So I'm in spreadsheets all day. It's horrible.
Yes.
But
yeah.
But there have been times where I
really feel.
I love my clients. I love you all very much. I love doing work for you, as long as I get to do it in little spurts. No, but there are times when I'm trying to tackle, you know, some kind of forecast or whatever, and I'm just like, I am not understanding why this is not, like, why is this formula not working, or right, whatever it is. And I'll just be like, screw it. I'll get up, I'll walk away, I'll go get something to eat, or I'll go walk around the block, and I'll come back, and it's like, right there. Like, oh my God, how did I not see that? But it's you're right. Your brain needs to, like, step away and go, yes, okay, we've got this, ching, 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 and then go. Rather, it's like it gets stuck in this little loop that it can't get out of, I think.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a therapy thing too, being stuck in a loop. Like, you can have years of your life that are stuck in a loop that you can't get out of. You know, if you break it down to just your every single day, the patterns that you do throughout your day reflect the rest of your life, you know, yes, and how you are going about it. And I actually have kind of the pleasure to work with some Brazilian people as a client, and their lunches are 2 hours long. They know how to live life, man.
They know how to do it.
It's very frustrating.
Yet they're still walking around in thongs. I don't understand.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, they enjoy fully their lunch, their time away. And I'm like, how do you do it, man?
Because when you have enough of that break, you can actually be like super productive afterwards. Think about it. If you've worked for 4 hours, right? You've gotten to your office at 9 or even 8 and you're at noon or 1 o'clock. If you just keep going, like your energy level flags, your everything is on a downhill slope because it's not sustainable.
No.
So taking that break, first of all, your body needs nourishing, right? And because you know that it's lunchtime, you're going to be hungry. Your brain already is telling you, like, you're probably salivating a little bit and your brain is giving you the cues like, hey, feed me.
So can you come into a company and like your workshops will help them figure out how to change their whole culture?
Yeah. So I take it all the way from very short one-offs, like, why is lunch so important? Here's the science. Here's really why you need it. All the way to, let's work together. Let's figure out what's not working. Why isn't it working? Why are people not bonding? Oh, it's because they're all eating, you know, like lunch at their desks. They're all siloed. No one's taking the opportunity to get up, you know, instead of getting up and saying, hey, Mary, I have a question about this. People are now emailing or texting. So you're reducing their physical and, you know, face-to-face interactions. And so our relationships are all suffering for it.
Yeah. And so how are you battling against the COVID of it all with that business model? When we are forced to be stuck in this silo, what do you say to a company now?
So Zoom has been a boon. Thank goodness for Zoom and all the other video technologies.
Right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. This isn't like, I am not sponsored by any technology. So I'm not trying to give Zoom any sort of extra attention.
You remember Xerox when everybody would say, could you Xerox this for me? It's the same thing with Zoom.
Yes.
Yeah, Kleenex.
Any video conferencing technology is really... So as much as it can be extremely detrimental to our health and well-being, it can also be a source for well-being. So it depends on how we use it. So the way that I've helped clients is, so lunch can still be had, and lunch can still be had on Zoom. And the reasons that having a lunch with a person over Zoom versus having a lunch at your desk while scrolling through social media is different is because when you're looking at someone's face, you're going to eat a little slower. You're going to be much more mindful of how you put the, because you're someone's watching you eat.
That's interesting. Right? That is interesting.
You're not going, so when you're sitting in front of social media, you're probably, you don't care. It doesn't matter. No one sees you. You shovel. You just shovel the food into your face. You're not mindful of taking, you know, eating slowly, how it's going into your mouth, because you know that, yeah, you look at the mirror, you know, clean your teeth, whatever.
Especially if you're in your car, which is horrifying that 40% of people are eating in the car.
The eating in your car business, I can't even start to tackle this problem. That is such a societal issue that we have. The fact that we really are looking at food as fuel as opposed to nourishment is a societal ill that I think is harming us to no end. But that's my pulpit.
Yeah, that's a huge topic. I love that topic, but it is huge.
It is huge.
It trickles down into every single part of our lives, including, you know, as you're getting older, you've got all of these pesticides and whatever you built up, and it's causing cancer to be on the rise. I have two women in a very close circle that I know with multiple myeloma, my mom being one. The woman that ran our daycare just had it. And she is a vegan. The woman that ran the daycare, and she thinks it's for pesticides. You know, it's so you can get in this rabbit hole of what in the hell do we eat? You know?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm this huge true crime fan, you know, and I was listening to one a while back. It was Bear Creek, but they figured out where one of the bodies was from based on like lead and pesticide levels and things like that.
Crazy.
That were just because they could figure out, not because this person ingested them, but just by living in that area, they could figure out what they were exposed to the whole time. So that was really interesting. You know what I was going to say, though, also was it occurred to me, because I don't eat in my car, and I like for years and years and years have banned my kids from eating in the car because I was like, I am not having one of those cars that are full of food.
Garbage cars.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
A, I would never drive a minivan. Thank God I got through that with four kids. I don't know how. And B, I was like, I am not being one of those people that opens up the car door and like, you know, stuff falls out. But anyway, no.
That's me.
Not for, you know, not knocking anyone who lives like that. But what I realized even before that was like, I've always had like BMWs and, you know, and stuff. And so when I got my very first one and I realized there were no cup holders in BMWs at that point in time. And I was like,
reason.
That's weird. Do they not eat in their car? And it was like, I mean, there are ashtrays everywhere, trust me. But
fit into cup holders, I'm sure, for the American market.
But it was just really interesting because I was like, oh my God, you had to get one of those ones that like hung on the door. Remember, they used to sell those plastic ones that hung on the door. But I was like, oh my God, it's because they don't.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, there's a whole culture. Unless you're working with people from Europe or some other country, you don't really understand that. That is culturally, they're so much healthier than we are because of their relationship to food and how they see it. Yep.
Well, I'm from Israel originally. And so for me, this is so natural and it just boggles the mind. We can get deep into how messed up the food system is in the US. If you look at kids, how we're teaching them to eat at school, like their school lunches are, they're literally being fed garbage. They're given 20 minutes to sit there and shovel garbage into their mouths. They have no respect for mealtime. They have no idea what it, they're not being taught how to have a meal.
Yeah.
You know, in our public education system, which, you know, we're doing so many things to these poor kids. I won't go down that rabbit hole.
So that's a question I have for you. You had said you had just moved to this country when we were talking a little bit before. So you came from Israel. And how old were your kids? Did you have kids then?
No. I came as a kid.
You came as a kid.
Yeah. So
you've been here for quite some time, but still that's ingrained in you, how you grew up.
Yes.
So,
and I'll tell you, my friends in Israel are like, why do you have a job? Like, this is so obvious. Like, what do you mean people don't eat meals together? I'm like, people don't eat meals together here. In Israel, like most companies, it's every day people have at least a meal together. It's at least lunch. Some companies, it's breakfast and lunch.
It's the most insulting to these cultures, the way that we handle food, and especially in the corporate setting. Like I was saying, I have this client that's Brazilian, and my husband actually works for this company now full time. And the cultural differences are incredible, and we get so frustrated because they're gone for 2 hours and they could care less. They're like, we're sticking with our culture.
Yeah.
I'm envious. How do you do it? How do you get yourself in that mindset? You know, do you take it in small chunks? Do you say this morning?
Yes. No, you can't do a wholesale, like we're throwing out everything unless you're starting a new company. And I've worked with startups, and that's easier, obviously, to establish a culture as opposed to shifting and changing a culture. But you start small. You start with a team lunch. You start with a team lunch and you see, you know, it's funny. So I was telling you before, I'm in a master's program for positive psychology. So I'm about to start an empirical study. I want to take the work that I've been doing with companies and actually put it to the test and really measure it scientifically and show that there is a correlation between a shared meal and collaboration and productivity. So that will be my work in the coming months. I'm hoping to go out in 2022. We'll see. It's hard with COVID protocols, but it's really shifting how we look at well-being. Also, I think that so many companies now with the great resignation, I think there's a real awareness that the way we've been functioning for the last 30, 40 years, when capitalism really like hit its stride and we were like, okay, FaceTime.
America.
And the right way to do work is to be at work for as many freaking hours as you can tolerate it before your body literally is like screaming with pain. But I think now we're seeing, like, after 40 years, like, this doesn't freaking work. People are burnt out.
Right.
And people don't. And now, having had this year and a half, 2 year period where you didn't have to do it that way.
And you didn't realize how burnout you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we got the great resignation happening. People are like, fuck that.
That is right.
Yeah. Work for my life. This is not the way to live. And right. I think that we can edge closer to the European ideal of work to live, not live to work. There is a way to integrate it all. There is a way where, okay, so maybe you're not going to make $7 million this year. You'll make a little less, or maybe it's not, you know, it's not the be all and end. Money isn't the be all and end all.
Do you need $7 million?
There are studies that show that once you get above $70,000 a year in income, you have to have your bases covered. Like,
right.
Your wellness is in the tank unless you can pay your bills. Like, if you can't pay your bills, it's a non-starter. Money is an issue.
Yes.
But once you make enough to pay your bills and be comfortable, any incremental increase does not make you happier.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that people are unaware of. You know, that is something we don't get. And so this constant, like, striving for more and more and more, especially more things, they don't make us happier. When it's related to money, we're happier when we actually give money to others. Happier when we have experiences that we can savor and remember. Because, you know, once you get that car, why is it no longer worth the same amount of money that when you paid for it as when you drive it off the lot? It's worth 50% its value. Once you drive it off that lot, and it's not just for the dealer, it's also for you, because you have it. And within a few days, it's so awesome. But then we have what's called hedonic adaptations as humans. So hedonism is the seeking out of pleasure. And the hedonic adaptation is everything that is novel after a while is no longer new and exciting anymore. And we adapt to it. The good news is adaptation happens on all fronts. So we adapt to good things and we also adapt to bad things. You know, bad news hits you. And yes, at the beginning, it's like the worst thing in the world. But after a few months, so someone who loses the ability to use their legs, yes, in that first year, it's horrible. But within a year, the studies have shown that people adapt. And so then there's a new normal, right? And that's how our brains work. We have all these, like, things that our brain just, no matter how much we try.
Yeah.
You know,
that makes me feel better. We bought a house and I was like, that's it. I'm going to be happy forever. And you're not.
No.
Like paint this. I really need to. And I want to smack myself. But I wanted to ask you, do you think, you know, women being so prominent in the workforce now, and women are really starting to hit their stride. We go through multiple changes throughout our lives. Becoming moms is a big one. And we learn to adapt.
What? What are you talking about? It's nothing.
Right.
It's nothing.
Don't you think that if we, you know, we find some way, you know, to just accept that all of these changes are good, women have it all. We have all the information on how to adapt to business, to creating a different lifestyle, and we just don't give ourselves enough credit for all that we've done.
Absolutely.
You know, and that just, it floors me. Even I do it to myself. And Dorothy reminded me this morning, I was texting about something. She's like, yeah, you know, some people aren't doing that with four or five kids in tow. And I was like, thanks, Dorothy. I really needed to hear that.
I tried.
Because we try to put ourselves all on the same playing field, and, you know, women especially. And because we talk so much about women's empowerment on this particular podcast, don't you think that we're the ones that need to lead some of this charge with the wellness? Seem to be the gatekeepers of the wellness and the dinner. And I don't mean to be sexist about it, but a lot of times we're better at it. We're better at multitasking, and getting the meal on the table is us a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband does what he does. He does what he can to help, but it's not everything, you know. speak to that a little bit. Will you be touching on any of that when you're in your MBA or your master's program that you're going through? Psychologically, are women able to handle this a little bit better, all the changes that are happening?
I think we need to really get to a point where we realize, like, yes, we can have it all. We just can't have it all at the same time.
They have it all at the same time.
Yes.
Exactly.
I think that that is a big misconception. And I think that we are our own worst enemies at times because we set up these expectations that we just, it's impossible to meet.
Yes.
It's impossible. You know, you become a mom, you need some freaking time to adjust to that. Not that you won't adjust and adapt, but it's not immediate.
You know, in fact, I'm a runner, right? And they always say that it takes the first 8 to 10 minutes on any run, no matter how much you run, for your body to acclimate and adapt to the fact that you're now running. But yet when we're moms and become mothers,
that's why I never adapt to running, because I stop after 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So if you keep going, you'll be fine. But we, as moms, you know, we think that, you know, okay, we birthed this kid, they give it to you, and you're out of the hospital and you're like, oh, now I am a mom. And so
I'm supposed
to know how to do all of this and be good at it and be well adjusted with it and all that. And I'm not. And it's fine. It's okay. It's okay.
The reality is none of us gets a training manual.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about you, but like nobody told me the truth about any of it. Like, I didn't know that I was going to have World War VII happening, you know, down below after I gave birth. I was like, wait, what is happening? Nobody tells you, which is also why I started the blog. I'm like, I am going to blow open secrets.
I love that.
Yeah, you know, I had twins first, and
World War VII, indeed.
Yeah, they were big, too. Yeah, they were like 14 and a half pounds of baby combined.
Oh, my God.
No, combined. So they were 8 and 6 and a half, but...
Holy schnickerballs!
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's a lot of baby.
But, it's funny because I remember when I was pregnant with him, of course, everybody's like, oh, it's wonderful. And the twin moms that I would run into every once in a while wouldn't say anything, but they'd be like, you know, congratulations or whatever, and that's it. And they would never say, like, you've got this or whatever. And then it's after, and you see parents, like, now I see moms with twins, like still in the stroller and stuff. And I don't try to go up to them and go, oh, isn't it beautiful and wonderful, whatever. I go up to them and I say, it is hard. And this might suck at times, but trust me, it will get easier when they get older. But it's just like nobody wants to say to you when you're pregnant, like, okay, I'm going to be honest with you right now. The first like 2.5 years, 3 years are going to suck big time because you don't want to scare them.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, because all you ever see like on social media is like the people sitting there with the two babies, one in each hand, and they're smiling and the babies are sleeping. And you're like, yeah, okay. 20 minutes ago, those babies were screaming their bloody heads off. And the mom is just now like, you know, she's got Prozac or whatever. And the babies are finally asleep because they're fed and they're all dead. But yeah, I mean, nobody tells you how tough
things are.
Do you
remember the magazine Working Mother?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my God. That
I wrote articles for them.
Did you really?
I did.
Well, let me tell you, that gives you some expectations that are hard to live up to.
Yes. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. Thanks, Dorothy. I was like, I can't do any of these things. And
right.
So tying it back to your business, I think that's where just simple meals, putting a simple meal on the table becomes like so overwhelming because you didn't take the breaks. Day you did
right.
You know, your day is structured like a furnace of heat, and so putting this dinner on the table seems like one more task as opposed to bonding.
Yes. Okay, so let me talk to that because I've worked with so many working moms, working parents and families, and I will tell you that the secret to easing the load there is to teach your freaking kids to cook. That is the secret.
That sounds more painful.
It is. And I don't lie, right? Like, this is not like, oh, you give them one lesson and then all of a sudden they're like freaking Mario Batali. That was the wrong chef to have picked. I'm sorry. They're not Gordon Ramsay. Chef, but if you take the time when they're young and even older, it doesn't matter. Like, pick a time, anytime. It's never too early or too late to teach a kid to cook. Any human. Because, you know, give a man a fish, teach a man to fish. Same concept. So because food was so important to my husband and to me, our older daughter started cooking when she was 10 months old. Like, she was in the kitchen scrambling eggs before she could even walk.
That's amazing.
And that is a humong. And let me tell you, it was a very selfish reason that I taught my kid to cook. I wanted her to bring me breakfast in bed. That was the ultimate goal. I'm teaching her to cook.
Someday. Mother's Day will be great.
And let me tell you, she actualized that dream when she was 8 years old.
Oh,
she made me breakfast in bed, brought it up to me. She was like, stay in bed. She went downstairs by herself, scrambled me some eggs, made me a nice little platter, made coffee, and brought it up to bed. So I was like,
aw. Meanwhile, I taught my kid how to cook and he's feeding his frat house.
But how amazing is that?
Well, I'm not benefiting.
I know you're not benefiting from it, but
yeah.
That's exactly it. But yeah. He is not, he can now fend for himself. That's the same concept. And, you know, if you take the time, and I'm not advocating on a Tuesday after you've had a long day of work and everyone's hungry to start teaching your kid to cook then. That's not an ideal time.
So what do you suggest as like a first time? Because I've got an 11-year-old too, and I would love to get him involved in doing some of this. What is a first step?
So pick a day. It could be a Sunday. It could be a Saturday. It could be a holiday, a day where you don't have a ton of stuff structured, right? You know, you have a couple hours that you can spend. Teach him how to use a knife. Super important. I really advocate knife skills because not knowing how to use a knife is so much more dangerous than giving a kid a knife. Okay. So give the kid the knife and show the kid how to curl their fingers, how not to cut their fingers off.
Yeah.
Because if you don't teach them how to use the knife, they will then take a knife and stab themselves, you know, or cut themselves or do a lot more damage.
It's going to cause them to have a longer day, man.
And that is so much worse. Teach the kid how to use the knife, how to properly hold it.
I don't
know. How to curl their fingers.
Not know my 11-year-old.
And then have them cut a cucumber. Have them cut some lettuce. Have them start with something really small. I'm not even saying the first lesson has to be, you know, cooking over a flame. It can be preparing a salad. Something super simple that's an easy, achievable goal. And you build self-confidence and you build that self-efficacy by having these small wins. And you start small. And if the first day you only have a half an hour, you make a frickin' a lettuce cucumber salad. Something super simple, something that they might be interested in. If you have a little more time, go to the grocery store together. Have them pick out something that looks interesting. It's like, ooh, I've never tried this. Let's try cooking something. Look up a recipe. Make it interesting, make it fun, and let them kind of start leading the way with what they want to try. This also really helps combat picky eating and kids who have neophobia, fear of trying new things.
Yeah.
Try to make it fun, make it into a game, make it about learning about a different culture. You know, you can learn about a different culture and about food and about, you know, different history, all in the kitchen. This is where the kitchen becomes such a great playground. You can read, you do math, you can share your own histories and your own stories. Like, oh, I remember making this with grandma or with my grandma or with dad. Or, you know, food is so evocative of memory, which is why when we share a meal, even if we don't know each other, food can be the entryway into a conversation because you don't have to say, like, tell me your deepest, darkest secrets. You can share a memory. Oh, I remember, you know, mac and cheese was like my favorite thing growing up. My mom used to make it for me. And I remember, like, I would have really crappy days at school and I would come home and she would give me this like loving bowl of mac and cheese. And that just made everything better. Boo, you shared something.
Yeah,
something deeper than you would share. Like, that's not coming up when you're talking about trend forecasting.
Yeah. And your kids aren't going to talk to you when you ask them the question, how was your day?
Well, not.
What was it like at school today? They don't. The biggest conversations I ever got from my sons anyway was driving them to practice that was an hour away. And like they, it just came naturally. But if you're in the kitchen doing these things, it's the same. And you're bonding over that experience.
And let me tell you, when they're chopping the cucumber and they're so focused on like this very, very specific task, there's like a little bubble that opens up in their brain and they're so much more open to sharing and talking about things than they would be if you said, how was your day? Fine.
Yeah, because they're in the moment instead of sitting there thinking about what happened or what's coming up or whatever. Well, they're just in that moment and it opens it up.
We have a lot of responsibility, I think, right now with our kids, with what's going on with COVID and what's happening to our kids and our adolescents. This is such a great message that I think leading the charge as adults, we need to have them come back to some kind of normalcy because they don't feel normal.
No. And social media is
terrible.
Really, not normal.
It is not normal and is really destructive.
Yeah.
Especially to adolescent and teenage girls, especially.
Girls, especially. I do know. Yeah. I don't want to go down the stats of what's going on. We all know what's happening with our adolescents. You know, but taking this back to like your daughter, she started at 10 months. I mean, it's never too early. And like, I would even venture to say my 17-year-old would be really excited to do this. And
absolutely.
Tonight. That's it.
Decided. There you go.
And that's it. And you know what? It gives them also, when you step back and you let them have that responsibility, It builds resilience. It builds confidence in them. It's like, oh, wait, I have this responsibility. I'm going to feed my family. And then they can show their love for you through this preparation. There's so many emotional and cognitive aspects to letting your kid take charge. It gives them so much. It helps. It really, especially in this time when COVID has been so isolating. So I'll give you a quick story. I'm sorry. I know that this is probably running a little long on this topic, but so my daughter had started a new school right before COVID hit. She started sixth grade, new school, didn't really know anyone. And then 5 months later, the whole world shut down. So she didn't have the ability to really create a social structure for herself before the world shut down and everyone reverted back to their elementary school cliques.
Right.
And she was left all alone. So she's sitting at home doing Zoom on the computer, you know, computer Zoom classes, and the days were short. For some reason, her school decided that like noon was as far as they were willing to take Zoom school. And so she had all day to do nothing with herself.
Right.
And whereas before the pandemic, she really had lacked self-confidence and didn't feel comfortable going out in the world by herself. All of a sudden, I think she just needed to get out of the house. And so at the age of 11, asked for the ability to walk or bike to the nearest grocery store to buy ingredients so that she
terrifying.
Could
eat. Terrifying. Terrifying. Oh, please. Terrifying.
Please. Like, please go. And let me tell you, it was terrifying because my town doesn't have sidewalks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You know, for her to walk or bike, like she's walking in the street and people, like animals around here, like it was terrifying.
Yes.
But I also understood that she needed this push out to become more independent. And so she started doing this every single day. She would go to the grocery store, buy ingredients and come home and bake.
God, how adorable is that?
It was amazing. And then all of a sudden she started connecting with her friends. Like she would reach out to the girls that she started being friendly with and they would bake together over FaceTime or Zoom.
Oh my God.
That is awesome.
Little baking workshops. And it lifted her out of her depression and anxiety that she was feeling from all of it.
What a success story.
And it really gave her this thing that was hers. It wasn't mine. It was hers alone. Like she did it. She was able to build something out of it. And it culminated in a few months ago, I was asked to give a cooking workshop for 50 women. And that morning she asked me, she's like, hey, can I just come with you? I'm like, not only can you come with me, but
But there's a caveat. Like, you can
cook, but you have to cook. I will do the talking and you will do the cooking for the the demonstration part.
That's
and
amazing.
She's like, really? Oh. And she was this like little adorable 13-year-old standing in front of 50 women and showing off her skills. And so that I literally saw the transition and how doing that work in the kitchen and being able to develop those skills, how it built that resilience and gave her like that gritty sense of self and independence. So,
well, I can't wait to see what she does with her life.
Yeah,
she's
really
kick ass chick.
Well, Michal, where can our listeners find you and your seasoned moments, or what's the best way for them to reach out? Because I'm sure there are ones listening now who are like, yeah, this is exactly what we need.
Please help me. Help us.
Yeah. So the website is really corporate based. So www.seasonedmoments.com. But you can also reach out to me on there. There's a contact form, and I am still mentoring and helping families. So if this is something that you need in your life, you can go to the website. It's not family focused on there, but I still do that work.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that, really. Awesome. You're family focused and you can help families. So I might be calling you.
Help
me out, girl.
Well, this is fantastic. I'm sure you all, I'm thinking you have at least Shannon who's going to be calling you.
Right.
But thank you so much for being a guest today. This is really, really great. Appreciate it very much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a delight.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss an episode of Oh Shit, What Now? And don't forget to connect with us on socials and rate our podcast. This podcast is a production of DK East Media and is edited and produced by Ultra Everything.